Welcome to episode 258 of Storyteller Conclave. This is a show all about helping you run the best tabletop role-playing game that you can. Whether you're a new storyteller or dungeon master learning the craft, or an experienced storyteller looking to take your game to the next level, I'm Sarah.
I'm Rob.
We're fiddling with knobs right now.
Just ever again. So slightly. I swear, I think this soundboard is finally hitting its...
Yeah.
It's kind of final days for us, but I also think it's related. So hopefully this is our sweet spot for tonight.
Yeah, hopefully we're not blowing out everybody's
audio. It doesn't
audio again,
look
so.
Like it. I think we're okay. I think we're going to call this good. We'll just try not to scream into the mics much. So
I will try not to scream.
Hey, Knox, good to see you out there.
Yeah, good to see everybody in the live chat. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes. Oh, again. Really just been work.
Gaming dead zone.
Total dead zone.
Absolute,
total dead zone.
Absolute dead zone for us.
I will say this. In the last week, I've seen more references to Savage World than I've seen probably in the last 2 months.
Yeah.
In just all kinds of weird places. I've got another friend who's in a Savage World game right now, and he was showing off his terrain, and I'm like, Savage World, go on.
Yeah.
You know, and it looked pretty cool because he's using a bunch of his 40K and one-page rule kind of stuff.
Yeah, it looks
fantastic.
Absolutely.
Of course. And then I got into that discussion on about 7C.
Oh, yeah. The discussion thread was, what would you like to see in a third edition of 7C? And someone was like, honestly, I wish they would just do it in Savage Worlds.
And that wasn't just one person saying that.
Right,
so
right.
That was nice to see some of that stuff. So, yeah, I still think I'll probably end up working that conversion at some point because I don't even think it would take me that long to do.
It really wouldn't. It really wouldn't. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, keeping it simple is the hardest part of that.
I've been seeing references to Savage Worlds just like in r/RPG, which isn't a strange place to see it. But some people were asking, like, you know, hey, what would you do for a cyberpunk game without using Shadowrun? Because Shadowrun's awful. And somebody was like, you absolutely need to do Interface Zero or... Is it Netrunners?
Yeah.
For Savage Worlds, it's a really good conversion. Yeah. I actually have the Netrunners book.
I thought you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, with all that set to the side, and just as a special note to everyone else, we are getting close to the end of our episodes.
Is this the final four?
We're in the final four.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like if this was basketball or something, it would mean something.
Yeah, we're in the semifinals, I think.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. So.
I don't know. I don't.
Well, my godchild is down in Texas right now in Worlds for the U.S. First.
Yeah, but for Robot Wars.
Yeah, but it's Robot Wars.
But it's Robot
it's
Wars.
It's Robot Wars.
Yeah, she's so. Kicking so much ass right now. So,
I'm so proud. So they start kicking their butt tomorrow, so.
So yeah, Steve and Wendy, if you're listening, that's please extend our congratulations and our well wishes to the family.
Yes, we know she will kick much ass.
Good luck in the Robot Wars.
And for all of you who are U.S. First fans, it's on Twitch. Watch it. Their fights are amazing.
It's really cool. It's actually really cool.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. All right, all that set to the side. We have a show.
Yeah, so this is actually comes from one of our contributors. We make reference to him all the time because he hangs out with us in the live chat every single episode, Knocks on the Box.
You should all come and join them.
That we talk a little bit about table lingo.
Yeah.
When we're talking about table lingo, we're talking about basically all of the terminology that is unique to a game. Or to tabletop role-playing games in general, specific to the system that you're playing, and even specific to the setting that you're playing, so like in-game terms.
Yeah, not even just lore. We're talking about the minutiae of the lore that makes the world what it is.
Yeah. So like when we're talking in-game lingo, I dead up think that Z Bashaw, who does the animated spellbook videos on YouTube, had the absolute best interpretation of cyberpunk lingo.
Yes.
And so I grabbed a couple excerpts here from it.
Oh, nice.
It's
okay.
Like, a sludge clapper never chups a bubble, or at least that's what I'd murm if these kiblies scruffed a skimp a sun in their ivies.
Oh my god.
I have no idea what any of that means.
Okay.
I think murm is short for murmur, which would be to say something.
Right.
But like, I have no idea what a sludge clapper is. A sludge clapper never chups a bubble. Okay.
Sludge crapper. Okay.
Scorn grummed those chisel freaks before Thum's first casing spawned globeside. And okay. I wasn't even surprised.
I would say Thum's first case scene spawned Globeside, aka his shell released from his the firearm.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way of saying it, honestly.
I think it's a great way of saying it too, but man, is there a lot of slang.
Yeah.
And like anybody who's played Cyberpunk 2077 kind of gets this as well.
Or even Shadowrun. Shadowrun had a whole lingo section.
Well, yeah,
specifically.
No, I think to Cyberpunk 77, the video game makes it very understandable.
Yes.
Because they do kind of tone it down. You can say pretty, you know, you can really tell what they're trying to go. But man, yeah, some of those like Shadowrun novels get this incomprehensible sometimes, where every other word is some sort of lingo. But understandably for especially for newer players who aren't used to a particular genre or they're not used to a particular setting or whatever, or even just tabletop role-playing games in general,
right?
This can be pretty daunting.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I remember going into, Shadowrun specifically and feeling that I had to use the lingo with people who had been playing it before, and without having that lingo, it felt like it. You almost feel naked as a character, like you're not immersed into it. You can't get yourself wrapped into it. So if you want to be a programmer or a hacker in the cyberpunk universe, you've got to use the lingo that's embedded in it. And some of that lingo bleeds through the mechanics, and some of it is just setting lingo, but it from the other aspect of it, I also felt like I could never run Shadowrun right. Like, as technical as a person I am,
right,
I could never meet the terminology at its core.
Right.
You know, enough. I have a hard enough time, as much as I love piracy and that time period, running 7C on the seas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I never know how far to go or how not far to go with certain players. And that's always a thing. But also, like, am I going to screw something up and say something just slightly wrong?
Right. It's kind of a cold war that takes place between you and your players. Like, so like as a player in your 7C game, it has enticed me to start learning nautical terms, something I had absolutely no experience with whatsoever. So I was picking up little bits of lingo from your game, and that enticed me to go and learn more.
Right.
But then you start this arms race of, like, you know some nautical terms. I've studied some nautical terms on my own. Are you going to say something wrong? And then the stuff that I've studied, I'm going to be like, no, that's called a fo'c'sle.
Yeah. Exactly. You know? Exactly. And you're like, okay, technically, yes, that is accurate, but we're also in a sloop.
Right.
You know,
so it's called a foredeck here.
Right,
you know?
Right. So I'm not going to lean into this. And also, fantasy, buddy, fantasy.
Like, right. And then three other players at the table are sitting there going, "All right, stop the pissing contest. Let's play the game."
Yeah. Because like one of my favorite things in regards to that was somebody was talking about Pirates of the Caribbean. It's like, you know, they steal the ship, right? And it's like, no, they didn't.
They commandeered it.
They commandeered the ship. Number one, and number two, they can't. There's not enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't bring this into port by me onesies. No, you really can't. You need a minimum of 12 people to do that right.
Right.
Like I don't care how quick you are at getting to the, you know, the yard arm and the rudder. Like, no. Like, that's not going to work out,
man,
for you.
Man, just playing three or four of us on Sea of Thieves, a game that is designed to control a ship with that many people, it's hectic. I can't imagine what a real ship is like. You
know? And just the strength you need to be able to bring in four sets of sails.
Yeah.
Alone, right?
Yeah.
That's just so many little things like that. But, again, I digress. It's like, and this, I think this is where the content becomes some of the breakpoint, is because what you understand, sometimes even contemporary stuff, makes that challenging. But really what I'm talking about is that breakdown, that simple material breakdown of changing from what we contemporarily know to what the setting knows it as.
Right. So changing things like, you know, a hacker into a net runner.
Right.
Or
right.
Changing magic into the one power.
Which I think is even a more of a stretch. You're like, a what?
Okay. The one power? There's only one?
There's only one.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I have other stuff on my sheet here. I'm just putting that down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so I guess the real question that then pushes into us is why use it? What does it really give us?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, it comes at the source material. You know,
yeah, agreed.
A lot of us aren't making this stuff up on our own. I mean, I'm sure a bunch of us have homebrew settings and stuff that we do come up with this, but a lot of us, we pick up a setting that already exists, mm-hmm. and that's all baggage that comes with the setting. It's all part of its world building, you know. Well,
it's part of the immersion of that setting.
Right. Right, exactly. So, you know, you're going to take words like magic and wizard and beast man, mm-hmm. and those are all very generic. They're understandable.
Sure.
But they feel generic.
Right.
Lots of settings have magic. Lots of settings have wizards and mm-hmm. beast men. But how many settings do you know of that have the one power?
Right.
That is used by Aes Sedai.
Right.
To fight the Trollocs.
Right. I mean, we've seen the, and I'm going to use this term lightly, bastardization of systems. Like, Tolkien had a world and genre that mm-hmm. we all can attach to pretty much now. Like, most people in contemporary spheres of community, when you look at them and say, do you know what an elf is? They know what an elf is.
Mm-hmm.
25 years ago, that really kind of spanned depending on what culture you were in.
Yeah, that's true.
And especially for D&D, it's not even a big thing to say elf.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no question about it. And so people bastardize elf, and eventually someone, you know, alters it enough to say, oh, the long ears.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. All right, I get it.
You know, right, right.
That's a slight change. But to call them something like the Nephilim,
mm-hmm.
you're like, what the heck is that? It's an elf. Oh, why did you just say elf? Because there's a word for that in the setting.
Right, because there's a word for it. It's called an ambulance.
Right.
So I use a lot of these examples from Wheel of Time specifically mm-hmm. because when I first started reading Wheel of Time, the first book, Eye of the World, it does not pull any punches. And just from a story standpoint, mm-hmm. like, it cuts you right into the action. The prologue to it is a like 3,000-year flashback before the meat of the story takes place to show you basically the breaking of the world.
Right.
That causes essentially all of the stuff that happens in the mainline story. And it just jumps straight in. It's like, oh yeah, he channeled Sidhe'en from the One Power, and, you know, because he was a powerful Aes Sedai. And you're like, what does half of that sentence mean? You know,
you'll know by the second paragraph.
It felt like that, but I didn't.
Right. Well, I'm sorry, by the second chapter.
I read that prologue 4 times and still had no clue what was going on.
Right.
I mean, now knowing what all those terms mean, I can go back and I know exactly what's happening, and it's a great scene. But, you know, to me, just getting in, not having any sort of introduction or any sort of guideposts to Wheel of Time, like Sean. I mm-hmm. mean, Sean was a huge Wheel of Time fan. He's the one that got me into it.
Right.
And so once I had him at my side to kind of go, this is this and that is that, and then there's a seagull, you know, I was finally able to engage with it. But it really, like, the first couple times I tried to read it on my own, it felt like that Z. Bashaw thing of, mm-hmm. like, you know, it felt like Robert Jordan was going, you know, yes, slug clapper never chubbed a bupple. Never.
Well, I also think that, so, like, that one of the things that books like to do about that, or books do about that, is they do drop you directly into the immersion, and you're kind of left floundering as you move into the book and discover it, discover mm-hmm. the setting. And you have that availability to do that, reread it, go back over it. When you're sitting at a table, you don't have time to really review. And I think that, you know, it can sometimes be a disservice to the players themselves in trying to keep up at speed, mm-hmm. you know? Like, it's one thing to try and keep up at speed with the rules, but to keep up at speed with what the terms are of the setting to understand.
Yeah.
You know, whether, is that term mean he's a bad person? Or does it just mean that he's a constable of some kind? Like, are the constables all bad people? Like, I don't understand the term that's being used here, but you don't have time to understand the term. It's just being used.
Right, right.
So,
right.
So I think in that sense, like, we need to get, I guess, through the confusion of it at some layer.
Yeah. So, you know, like, how do you untangle it for your players?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first step to that is using it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, like, as the storyteller, you are going to set the precedent for how that world is interacted with, right? Mm-hmm. So by consistently saying the correct lingo terms, players are going to slowly pick up on them.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing then is you're giving them context.
Mm-hmm.
For all these terms, you're putting them in a place, in a time, in a setting with a purpose. I experienced quite a bit of this actually with my own Elder Scrolls setting, because mm-hmm. there are certain lingo terms that take common fantasy tropes and adjust them a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, like, elves are not called elves commonly. They're called mer, because the dark elves are called dun mer. The high elves are called Alt-Mer,
mm-hmm.
and the wood elves are called Boz-Mer,
mm-hmm.
hence
Mer.
you don't have elementals.
No.
You have Atronach.
Right.
You don't have demons. You have Daedra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have, you know, outer realms or anything like that. You've got Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do, you know, it did take a little bit where mm-hmm. there was a sort of learning curve at my table where people were like, oh, it's a fire elemental. You're correct. It is a flame Atronach.
Correct. It's just a reset, not a no, you're wrong. It's
right.
a this. It's like you're using the player colloquial. Great.
Yep.
Your character would call it a Atronach.
Atronach. Yeah. Exactly.
And yeah. in that, you're not cracking the whip on them. You're not,
sure.
you're not abusing them. But at the same time, you're letting your players recognize that you said the word, know what it is mm-hmm. in their own terms to be able to come back. It's language learning at its finest.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the first things you have to do in a language is hear it
mm-hmm.
or read it, you know, in a phonetic way that you can attribute something to it.
It's really no different than Sesame Street was doing for us when we were little. Show mm-hmm. us a picture of an apple. Hear someone saying, apple.
Right.
Apple.
Right. You
take a bite of it. Mmm, this is a delicious apple.
Right.
Ouch, that is a Atronach. Atronachs are hot.
Yeah.
This is a flame Atronach. Can you say Atronach?
Let's all scream and run.
Exactly.
But the more that it becomes then regular for them to use the term.
Yeah.
Or you can draw those terms out of them, the deeper they immerse themselves and create that into a permanent memory for both them and their character.
Exactly. And I think the big thing is, like you said, you're not cracking the whip on them. You want to make sure that it's a positive experience, not a negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if a player does, it takes a little bit to grab a hold of the setting. If they do have to ask you a dozen times what an Aes Sedai is, just mm-hmm. tell them.
Or if they're saying it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Just subtly correct them. Like, oh, it's an icy dice. Yes, it's an Aes Sedai. Correct. You know.
Yep. You're pretty close. Pretty close.
You know, don't punish them or anything like that. And also, it's okay if they kind of come up with their own little, you know, like, as long as they're understanding the concept
mm-hmm.
that's trying to be conveyed by the word. It's all right if someone calls your Jedi a space wizard
mm-hmm.
if they're not a huge Star Wars fan and don't ubiquitously know what a Star Wars or what a Jedi is. You know, not everyone's going to pick it up on the first try. It's not as important as the concept of trying to communicate. You know what they mean when they point at the guy with the lightsaber and say, hey, that guy's a space wizard, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, he's a Jedi. You're correct.
Yeah. And even to say that you know, that if they immerse themselves even further and say, like, oh, they must have been one of the Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, great, wonderful, you did a little extra study there.
Right, right, you know? Right, right.
And even in there's a concept of acceptance of culture within it. And if they choose that their character is going to be, you know, a little swarthy with even the terms of the world, as long as it fits, sure. Now they're having fun with it. They're connecting with it. It's a flavor to be added. Right. It's there. If they're interacting with the world and feeling themselves stepping into it, that is a level of immersion, and that should be accepted and attributed as positive, regardless yes. of the level that they're doing it at.
Exactly.
So
And I think the other thing for, you know, for you as a storyteller, too, is make sure that you're providing context around the term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to just say an Aes Sedai walks into the room.
Sure.
Okay. I don't know what the hell that is.
Right.
If I don't understand what an Aes Sedai is, the only information I have gleaned from walks into the room is that it has legs and it wants to be here.
Yes.
It could be a cat for all I know. You
exactly.
Know? But if I had to say something like an elegant woman with an ageless face clad in a green dress of fine fabric walks into the room, you can tell by looking at her that she is an Aes Sedai, a female wielder of the One Power, the magic of this world.
Fantastic.
Now you know, bam, you know exactly what an Aes Sedai is. Or, or at least you have enough context to know that it is a human woman in a green dress. The green's probably significant in some way because we specified it.
Right.
And that she is a magic user of some sort.
Yep. And beyond that, talking about it within context and you crouching the terms to understand their power, how what station they have is all part of that. No different than you look at, like, how do you explain a king?
Right.
A king can mean a lot in a lot of different places, whether they're the king of the barbarians or king of, you know, a stately court.
No, I watched Fallout. A king is an Elvis impersonator.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
You know, but in context to the world, you're establishing that concept in a framework that they can then relive in their mind's eye.
Exactly.
Every time when you say, as the king enters, they're all like, we kneel. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're stepping into it.
Yes, exactly, exactly. The corollary to this, though, is that you don't want to be too descriptive with things. Because I know a lot of us, when we're trying to give context, can fall into that nerd trap of giving history lessons. And so you can confuse the issue by giving too much information and context. Like, the above example, I can say, an Aes Sedai is a female user of the One Power, specifically the ones trained in the city of Tar Valon. Oh, so from this I can glean that she uses the One Power, and she's from Tar Valon. Are there magic users that don't come from Tar Valon? Yes, and those ones aren't called Aes Sedai. Oh, interesting. Okay, so I've learned something new as a player now. But what we sometimes do is say, okay, yeah, so they're broken up into Ajahs and they're labeled by color. See, green are basically battle mages that have multiple warders with them, and instead of the typical one warder, or no warder in the case of the red Aja, which is the Aja that hunt the human...
No.
Exactly.
Let the world explore things, or let the players ask.
Exactly. Now, everything I just said about Aes Sedai is correct there. None of it added any useful information to the player, and in fact confused the issue.
Right. They're not doing research here.
Right.
That's not a thing that they needed. It didn't add to the scene. It wasn't a question that needed to be asked. Nor was it something that even if it was important to the scene, that's still too much information to be giving people at a first run level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's nothing there for them. You're just painting a world around them that they now walk through like a painting. That's not enjoyable.
They are absorbing 0% of that.
Right. And so, effectively, what you want to try and do is only frame the lingo in what is important for the scene to feel like it is part of the world. If it sits outside of the scene, like we always talk about with the mountains, then don't worry about it until it's necessary to explain that or to answer that question. A good example of this that's a little more contemporary, at least in story, that people have was I look at Critical Role, the animation. I did not watch the hundreds of episodes that were made to create, you know, that were played out in Let's Play to generate that first season that I watched.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I understood from the moment that the first dragon landed with them that there were others.
Yeah.
That were different. I didn't need to know each one of them and their names and what their powers were.
Right.
What kind of green and red and black dragons were, right? That was going to come later because it wasn't necessary for me to have all that information. Nor did I need to know everything about each one of those characters that were in there. nor any of the people they were meeting. I needed to know just as much as the scene allowed to make it have depth.
In context.
Correct.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Now, I think this sits very well in the same kind of framing as our out-of-game lingo. Our mechanics, if you will.
Yeah, because, you know, I think a lot of us take our mechanics for granted.
I think way too many, especially storytellers. We are dead bad at taking them for granted, without a doubt.
I mean, look, out of game lingo, when we're talking about that, is basically just a fancy way of saying the vocab specific to the game system. Okay, so words like fate point, thaco, drama dice, plus one forward, these are all lingo, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I don't understand Powered by the Apocalypse, you can't say to me, oh yeah, take plus one forward. Take what now?
Yeah.
Plus one of what?
Correct.
You know? Forward to where?
On to dawn?
Or second star to the right? Straight yeah. until morning?
Or even like 7C is number D number, 2D8.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, roll and keep, you know, two keep four, or four keep two, you know?
Right.
Or, you know, like that. Like, mm-hmm. what is that?
Keep, you know, or and then keep the highest.
Right.
Highest of what? What you roll. What am I supposed to be rolling? 2d8. Do I roll 2 8-sided dice? No. Yes.
hot take?
Yes.
Even 2d8, that notation
yes.
of number d sides
yes.
is lingo.
It is.
Because I have been at tables with people. In fact, I think Knox in the Box is one of them, simply because this is his first role-playing experience was with me, where it was like, okay, yeah, roll a d8 for me. Which one's, what's a D8? It's the 8-sided one. What is it shaped like? I'm not counting the sides on all these damn things.
Yeah.
It's the one like two pyramids stacked on top of each other. It looks kind of like a diamond.
Yeah.
This one? Yes.
Yes. I mean, I will straight up say, not everybody is great at geometry, especially students.
Sure, absolutely. But, you know, it like breaking it down and having that moment where I realized that like a notation that I've been using since second edition D&D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of roll 2d8. That's lingo.
Yeah.
That right up there is not a ubiquitous thing that people understand.
No.
You know?
Not in the least. Not in the least. And I think lingo is both good and bad at the table, because I think it can definitely pull people away from the game, and be super hard to overcome early on if it's not known. And I'll flat out say, players are really bad at communicating what they're not good at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you have a storyteller who just met with a bunch of people, like a Gen Con or something, and they immediately tell you all of the things that they don't know about whatever they're about to play, it's a rarity.
Yeah.
Because you never want to sit down and look the fool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just a thing. Like, that we have a terrible design on that, where we think that you if you don't know something, it's better to be quiet than to ask a question. And unfortunately, that with lingo makes it even more challenging.
It's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
Tom Sawyer, I believe?
I think it might be. In either case, it's a lot of times I think storytellers feel that interacting with the lingo can sometimes stop a story, mm-hmm. like and cause meta disruptions. I'll use that term, a meta disruption, where you're working through something and then suddenly to explain what's going on, now you have to explain the components of what they're doing again.
Right, like, right.
You need to spend a Benny
here. From a rules standpoint.
Right, and now your distance, every step is another meta distance away from the actual gameplay that you're trying to
yep.
capture them into.
And when gameplay starts grinding to a halt, you start losing the attention of your players and such like that. And I think a lot of us are terminally afraid of that happening. Mm-hmm. So there's this knee-jerk reaction of, like, if we need to start explaining little terms like what's a Benny,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's a trait die, what's a wild die, what does acing mean, you know, you start kind of like having this knee-jerk reaction of like, I don't want to get into the weeds with that, just roll the damn dice, you know.
Right. And I think players at the same time feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They'll play less, they'll
yeah.
back off
yeah.
and not engage because they're not confident with how to engage.
Right. I mean, I think ultimately what it comes down to is that like game lingo can be a real double-edged sword for you. You know, it can be both easier and more daunting to overcome and learn. It's easier because your story beats aren't dependent upon it. Right. I mean, a player won't necessarily feel lost in the story and not know what's going on because they don't understand, like, what a Benny is, right?
True. They
can still understand that the Count tried to assassinate the King and we were friends with the King, so now we're mad at the Count and we have to go chase him down.
Right.
Like, not knowing what a Benny is not going to stop that from happening.
Right.
And usually you can take the time to tutor your players on this, you know. I mean, it does slow down gameplay, but, like, the Count's not going to get away if you need to take 5 minutes to explain how Bennies can be used.
Right.
You know, your story waits on that. That's not taking place in the course of the story.
But at the same time, like I said, your players don't necessarily know what they don't know, and when those moments come up, they're not understanding the rules in their own framework.
Yeah.
But really, it's just the terms within that rule set that add the extra depth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just, I need to know what to roll. It's, I need to know the terms of what I need to roll.
And not only that, I mean, we need to remember that the rules are the interaction layer for the story, right? The rules are the method by which they are going to interact with the story.
Yeah, I can't.
So once we finally chase that Count down and confront him, what do I need to roll to punch him? What do I need to roll to stun him with an intimidation, you know, so that he doesn't run away from us again? Okay, well, now if I don't understand the game, if I don't understand the lingo, if I'm not engaging with it, if I find that intimidating, then I find interacting with the story intimidating. So it acts as a gatekeeper to enjoying the story.
Exactly. That's actually a pretty fantastic term for it. And I don't like gatekeepers, but at the same time, like, we talk about players needing to learn the game. And I think this causes its own layer. And we even saw it in Discord talking with some of the people who were talking about it who are not Americans by thing, but the books are written in English.
Yeah.
And they're having to figure out contemporary transfers of English terms for, like, Benny. There is no translation for Benny.
Right.
It is a Benny in Iceland as it is here.
Right, because it's a slang. It's a slangified, shortened version of the word benefit.
Right.
Which is an English word, you know?
Yeah. We should just go back to Latin. Everybody should just go back to Latin for all your gaming terms.
Absolutely.
It'll translate so much easier for everyone.
Extremis malus, extrema remedia.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. All right, so what can we do about this?
All right, so
how do we make this work?
What can be done? Yeah. Well, you know, first off, just like the in-game lingo, encourage your players to use the correct terms. You know, put them in context. This is simple, but constantly calling it a Benny instead of one of those reroll token thingies.
Yes.
Will cause less confusion when the word Benny is said.
Yes.
And then, you know, like I said, use the correct terms yourself in context.
Yes.
So I do this at my table, because the table largely grew up with you running 7C.
Yes.
Okay. And so everybody knows a die that rolls its highest value that will then be rolled again and added to the previous value as an exploding die.
Correct.
Savage Worlds calls these acing.
Correct.
Okay, you have aced that die. That die has aced. So it's taken some... it's not a huge difference.
Right.
But for me, it's important because the rules all make reference to acing dice.
Right.
And so to remove that whole, like, wait a minute, is acing the same thing as exploding sort of level of confusion, I always call it acing.
Right.
And when people say something exploded, I say that's correct. You aced that die.
Yes.
And I will say it myself. I roll out in the open. I stopped using a GM screen.
Right.
So I roll my dice right out in front of you. I'm like, okay, he's going to roll to hit you. That aces. That aces again. And the wild die aced. Okay, cool.
Yep.
So you all hear it, and you see it, and it's all reinforced, you know?
Yep, exactly. And it's living by example, great way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, again, that simplistic point of name it, define it, list its uses, and give clean examples.
Right, right.
I think this is where the part that always gets me is the naming and defining.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times even books do a bad job at it, and then once you're one step away from the book, it can get exceptionally painful.
Oh, yeah. They start throwing lingo at you on like page 3, and it takes until page 47 of the rule book to define what that term means.
Dude, I've seen so many rule books do that, and it drives me absolutely nuts.
As much as I came around to liking Cortex, Cortex does that from the get-go.
It really does. It really does.
Oh, it was infuriating to try to learn without outside aids.
Yeah, so I have this story about a specific term. And some of you players will recognize it.
Well, hold on. Let me frame this one.
Fair enough.
Because the next thing on the list is to explain your acronyms.
Correct.
Okay. So, acronyms are a big thing. Games love them.
Yeah, and older games like them even more.
Mm-hmm.
So GM was running a second edition D&D game because they had a lot of the books for it. They wanted people in. They had the, you know, people were interested in D&D and some very, I will say, more rogue-like gameplay where they were planning on having multiple characters and grinding through things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the players was very involved from a story aspect, but was really having a hard time with any roles, period. And at one point in the game, apparently just breaks down and literally just says, you know, like, I don't understand what I'm doing here. And they're just like, well, what's your THACO? I don't know what you're, you know, what do you mean? And they're just like, you know, what's the AC? What are you going to do with it? And like, no. You've said the word a dozen times in the first 3 game sessions. What the hell is THACO? They're like, well, it's what you need to hit. No, stop. What is THACO or whatever? And they said it wrong 3 times. And he's like, do you not understand to hit armor class 0?
No, and they, that's the person just
stared at
you.
Them and was like, that's what that means? They're like, yeah, okay, thank you. Now I understand that there's a bunch of math that you've been doing in front of me that I didn't have any reference for.
Yeah.
And they were just like, okay. That's where I made huge mistakes.
Yup.
And that's the thing, is that it can be that simple, is that you can't see beyond the forest of your own words.
Yeah. There's an XKCD comic that I recently was laughing about. XKCD 2501, in case anybody's wondering.
Okay.
And it's 2 geologists talking.
Okay.
And one of them says something effective like, you know, your average person, you know, with no geological, you know, experience only knows the chemical formulas for like 1 or 2 different feldspars and like a, you know, something silicate, you know.
Yeah.
And the other guy goes, and quartz, of course. Oh, of course, you know. And the subtitle on it basically says like, experts in their field frequently overestimate the common knowledge of,
yes,
you know, of everyday people.
Yeah.
And it's true. We really get in our own heads. Like, kind of like I was saying earlier about how we don't even realize that saying something like roll 2d8, roll 2d6 is lingo that we take for granted because it's so common across all role-playing games for decades now. But, you know, coming down to, like, acronyms and stuff like that, what's your THACO? I know what THACO is, but I'm not taking the time to understand that you have no clue what a THACO
or
is.
Or what AC is.
Yeah, even AC, you know? What's your AC? AC, hold on. And you start, like,
searching
as a
sheet.
Newbie player, you start looking for pairs of words that come to, you know, AC. Is that autocannon? Like, no, we're not playing modern. You know, your armor class. Oh, armor. Oh, I know what armor I did. And I wrote the number in the little shield icon on my character sheet. Now I know what that is, you know.
Right.
But just switching from AC to armor class.
The other one that got me was terms that aren't part of game systems that they aren't comfortable with, or aren't even understanding, because it's not a term that even references. Everybody roll initiative. What? Roll for initiative. I don't understand what you're talking about. you roll to see what turn you go in the phase.
Oh, where's my initiative skill?
Yeah,
right.
And it's those types of things that are, yeah, they're part of the rules to understand the complexity of the game. But when you just use the term without defining it in any level of context, it can get very frustrating. It can make it feel like the player is not engaging with the rules, not studying the rules, not playing, not preparing for the game.
Yeah, and it can make them feel a little gatekept.
Oh, very much so.
You know, a little like, oh, I don't speak these people's language.
Right.
Everybody else at the table is having a great time and all seem to know what's going on, and I'm clearly the outsider now.
I will straight up say it's one of the main reasons why I did not play World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond by myself.
Oh, wow.
I played with a couple of close friends, and we kind of just kibitzed around, but the moment that raiding came in, I wanted nothing to do with it, because it was all just terms.
Mm-hmm.
With no explanation. There was no wiki page to go to learn what the goat was.
Yeah, yeah.
To this day, I still don't fully understand the term goat.
Greatest of all time?
I've heard it misused a billion times.
Oh, okay.
Like, what's the goat meta? Oh, it's not goat anymore. It's something other term. And I'm like, I didn't understand goat to begin with, and now you're using another term and saying it's not goat?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about, actually.
I'm just going to take a two-second jaunt here into that design, because, again, it's esoteric into what we're doing, but mm-hmm. effectively, like, watching people explain what the meta of Overwatch was by using World of Warcraft raid terms for shield defense and DPS and things like that.
Yeah.
And then saying, oh, all the meta's changed. Goat isn't important because it's now this. Mm-hmm. They changed from greatest of all time, which, again, I didn't quite understand that was truly the terms that they were referencing, mm-hmm. because there is never a greatest of all time for the game of Overwatch. Because the meta changes so much.
Sure.
You know, damage, cues, and things. So there isn't a base level design to always go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're not embedded in that world and or getting in at a ground level with someone who can explain pulling and routing and crowd control.
Oh, you mean CC? Yeah.
You know, all of these components, kiting. You just don't want to engage.
It took me a week to figure out what kiting was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, there are no kites in this game. What are they talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing is that the best thing you can do in those situations is be the gentle community.
Mm-hmm.
To understand that even at the basic level, they may not understand the term, let alone what it defines behind it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It may seem obvious to you, but it's probably not going to be obvious to any of them.
Mm-hmm. And so. I mean, I think deep down at its core, when we're playing these games, you know, we've talked a lot about, like, the assumption of friendship at the game,
mm-hmm.
And such like that, that, like, the goal is for everyone's enjoyment.
Yes.
Everyone's enjoyment. So mm-hmm. be patient. Take the time to teach the lingo and forgive the stumbles and confusions.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to have people feel welcome and included and empowered and educated at your table
mm-hmm.
than it is to have fast gameplay that leaves somebody behind.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I remember back when we were running D&D, I had two players. One was playing a rogue, one was playing a monk, and neither were really understanding the system to begin with. Both very narrative players that weren't enjoying the sort of crunch level of D&D, but very ultimately were not understanding how best to utilize their character and therefore enjoy playing it, you know? I took an evening off, invited them both over, and was like, okay, we're going to run a couple, like, tutorial combat situations so you can see under what circumstances your character's abilities of things like sneak attacking and disengaging and, you know, using key points and whatnot, how all of that works for you, you know, under what circumstances you're going to look for that. And I think we all walked away feeling a lot better about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still D&D, so it was still silk stockings on a pig, but, you know.
So true. So whoops, true.
I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? Was that my outside voice?
That was.
Whoops.
Nobody's ever yelled at us. We don't care.
That's true.
I think this was good.
Yeah, okay.
I feel pretty calm. We got some questions. We can hit these questions.
All right.
I like them. Captain, who we had on last week, have you ever come across an RPG term that made you go, nope, I'm not going to say that out loud?
Oh, I'm sure I have. I'm trying to think of any off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, I know there was a few. I know there was a few that I just was like, no, that's not appropriate, or that's not something that's going to come across the table properly.
I don't think it's ever been like, I don't think it's ever been like, you know, inappropriate of like it was a sexual innuendo or anything like that. But I think there have been terms in the past where it was just like, it's such a silly way to phrase. I think Powered by the Apocalypse kind of does this for me, where it's like, take plus one forward.
Yeah.
Why are we saying plus one? It's a plus one bonus on your next roll. That's what a plus one forward is. I have to use a few more words to say it.
Right.
But why did we have to lingoize a plus one bonus on my next roll?
Yeah. I felt that Numenera kind of did that with some of its things.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that it explained, it tried to explain the, I guess, its basic component, these effectively just one-use objects or short-use objects.
Yeah.
But creating a specific term for them that seemed way outside of what they were.
Right, right.
Like, to the point where, like, it doesn't have an impact on me in my mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't honestly tell you that it meant it had any reference.
Right, right.
And I think that's the other part that gets me is like, if it's not something you can comfortably use because it doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
even in the context, then it really makes it challenging.
Yeah.
And you're not going to use it. You're just never going to use that.
I know what the other one was. The one I bounced off of even harder than plus one forward.
Hmm.
Still Powered by the Apocalypse. Hold.
Okay.
So there are moves I've seen where it's like, okay, scrying.
Yeah.
Hold three. For each one of your hold, ask the storyteller a question. Okay. Did we need to invent a term that made you for ask the storyteller three questions?
No.
Did that need lingo?
Yeah.
No. I am never using the term hold. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am remembering vaguely some vampire stuff that did the same thing where they added terms that were completely unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in magic and thaumaturgy and stuff like that, where it was just like, you've already made this difficult. It's magic.
Yeah.
It's just magic. Why are we going deeper than this?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all for keywords.
Sure.
Like, to me, I think one of the greatest things was, as a Warhammer Fantasy player,
mm-hmm.
Moving from 5th edition to 6th edition,
mm-hmm.
was it? I can't remember which edition it was. Whatever the last edition was, moving from the second to last edition of Fantasy to the last edition of Fantasy. Yeah, Nox says, stop trying to make hold happen.
It's not going to happen.
I remember there was a lot of scattered rules. They described random movement,
mm-hmm.
In bespoke terms in like five different ways across five different sources. And
yeah.
then when the new edition came out, they were like, random movement is a keyword. It works like this.
Yeah.
So if your thing says random movement 2d6, these are the rules.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's standardized across the board.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all for something like that, but that's necessary because that describes a specific thing happening mm-hmm. that has a rules interaction for it. But like, take a plus one bonus.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't need lingo. That's just plus one, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. So, Miki. Yeah.
Okay. Have you incorporated table lingo into real life conversations, like with family or colleagues or even strangers?
100%. I call people chummers. I've done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've definitely done that. Usually with the people that have direct connections to Shadowrun. I've done that before. I have used other game terms in the past. I'm trying to think of some times when I've done it, but it's with gaming community people, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely used the term loot. probably way too many times.
It's become kind of fashionable to call people that are just like random people
or NPCs. Especially
people you don't care about NPCs. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's something that's come up.
I think that's kind of funny.
But yeah, I think I want to say more cyberpunk terms have come out,
mm-hmm.
like that are not the actual terms for the thing, but you're like, yeah, that works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I've actually seen quite a few communities grab Edgerunner. Comments
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
lately, you know, and pull those into lexicon.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we have seen it. Like I will say that there's becoming certain terms into lexicon that were never there
mm-hmm.
because of the prevalence of things like Critical Role. Like the D&D movie, where we're moving it out of the shadows and into contemporary culture at some level.
Yeah, I dare say that you can say to, I don't say most common people, but at least a decent amount of younger people, at least,
mm-hmm.
even if they're non-gamers, you could say roll for initiative, and they understand, they don't know what that means from a mechanical standpoint, but they know that a fight's about to break out.
Correct, correct.
You know, somebody makes a comment about your mom, somebody goes, oh, roll for initiative, guys.
I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I especially D&D terms specifically.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Criticals have always been
yep.
a thing that's like, oh, dude, that's a nat 20.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have said that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yep. ooh, that's a fail. That's
ooh,
a that's
rolled,
a one.
Rolled a one on that.
That one.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, so it's I definitely could see those kinds of terms are used all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you know whether it's in common knowledge with my friends and stuff, but yeah. I definitely that.
I don't think it's unique to tabletop games though. I mean, I think a lot of like video game culture especially is bleeding out. Like I see Skyrim terms all the time.
Oh god, yeah.
Out in the wild. But I mean, that's a very ubiquitous game.
Yeah.
I love the memes where it's like a white fluffy cat sitting on a white fluffy carpet,
mm-hmm.
and you almost can't tell the silhouette,
right.
except you see the two little eyes and the toe beans,
mm-hmm.
and it's like sneak 100.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. People understand what that is,
yeah.
even if they've never played.
Right.
To the same extent that it's like you see a guy who's got one crutch. And you're just like, oh, did he take an arrow to the knee?
Something, something arrow to the knee.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. So I think, I definitely think that. And to answer the second part, like, have you ever done it on accident? I don't think I've ever done it on accident. I've always thought that most of the terms come through pretty obviously.
Yeah. And I'm usually the one telling other people to remember to give context. So I'm generally not so deep in my cups that I throw terms like that around willy-nilly.
No. And I will say to the other part of that is, like, do people often look at it funny or anything like that? No. That's the thing about it is that the terms are couched enough that it's not like someone's just standing off to the side laughing and then they're like, okay, what does that mean?
Right,
you know,
right.
I don't think it's that. I think it's within enough context that they understand what it roughly means.
Also, though, I think, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I surround myself with gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I hang out with a single person who isn't at least tangentially a gamer.
I have a few, definitely. I definitely do have people who are not gamers, who are aware of gamer culture, but they are not.
I think, like, my sister is about the only person I can think of, honestly.
Yeah, probably on your circle set. Like, it would take me a pretty decent dig to find somebody
right.
who doesn't fit into the gaming culture for you.
Like, all my friends are your friends anyways. And it's a smaller circle.
Yeah.
Because I'm an introvert.
Yeah,
so.
It's a sub-circle of mine, but, like, my circle goes pretty wide and far.
That's true.
Because I've got, you know, I've got old business circles. I've got things like that are just totally
yeah.
obscure in comparison.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say that there's a decent number, but what's funny is that that's still drawing pretty small, because I can tell you that there are people who I didn't think were gamers that are now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've talked to them, they're like, oh yeah, I've been playing D&D. I'm like, you've been playing D&D.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
Are you sure it's D&D that you're playing?
Mm-hmm.
It's usually my first question. It's like, oh yeah, we're actually playing Dungeons & Dragons, and, like, you know, we're doing a module. I'm like, okay, you're using all the right terms for D&D. Gotcha. Okay, you're uh-huh. playing D&D. I get you.
And then you shed a single tear.
Yeah. Yes and no. Like, it's a gateway, like we talked about.
Yeah,
it's,
that's true.
It is the most easy gateway to a recognition, right? Mm. You know, I'm not going to knock people if the first computer that they get is a Dell XPS.
Right, right. Because at least they're trying.
Right. Yeah. You know, you didn't go get a custom build at Micro Center because it was, you know, because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
No.
Right.
You at least you're stepping in and getting into the PC. You got away from a Mac. Congratulations.
Yes.
You know, now you and your wife can both have computers versus you just having a Mac.
I love the shade being thrown at Mac, at Macs in general. It was harder for me to come out as trans than it was as a PC user in my family.
I'm just saying we're better friends now.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
I didn't quite know you before, but now I do. Now I do.
And we weren't speaking the same language.
It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. All right. I think that's good. I didn't see any additional questions get thrown at us, but we always appreciate them.
No, but I do kind of want to like highlight the comment that that Miki made, and also Kilkey was kind of commenting on this as well, because both of them are non-native English speakers.
Correct.
And so not really a question, but maybe an interesting for some. We play D&D in German and have translated books, and we were kind of mentioning this earlier, but I wanted to read the comment out loud.
Yeah, yeah.
However, when playing, we and many of my friends who play with other groups all talk in a funny mix of German and English,
yes,
especially when using abbreviations like DEX, AC, or DC. Even though we actually have translations and even German abbreviations for everything. It's also kind of funny table lingo for those who are just joining us sometimes cannot understand our gibberish.
Yeah, because you're changing dex, which is dexterity, into the base word in German for dexterity and then abbreviating it.
Right, right.
And like, I'm thinking about that going, wow, coming into those games has to be a challenge. Especially if you're playing it in German, but your table isn't German, but that's the closest you can get, right? You're all Dutch playing in German off of a translated English book.
Okay, I just Googled translate English to German, and dexterity is Gewandheit.
Okay.
So, Miki, if you're hearing this, please destroy let me know us. If I said that right.
Yeah.
Gewandheit.
Yeah. And then you're gonna abbreviate that.
Right.
Of something. Of some kind. So, wow. Especially, like, armor class.
Oh, yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, some of that's going to translate close, because I'm trying to think of base language here, and then I'm not a linguistics expert, but, like...
Der Soldenblocken.
Yeah. See, now you're... Now that's inappropriate. But again, that's...
I'm trying.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine. But I think that there's something to be said for that because, like, you study Japanese.
Yeah, yeah.
And much like America, Japan bastardizes English words into Japanese at times.
I was actually just telling Sean about this the other day. I said, like, so we're watching something French.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd said something about... bread being pan.
Yes.
And I was like, ironically, I said the Japanese word for bread is pan because they didn't have wheat and bread before they started trading with the French.
Right.
And so the French brought it over and said, this is pan. And so that's what the Japanese word for
it is. Just called it that, yeah.
Exactly. And it's written in katakana, which is the alphabet you use for words that are not natively Japanese.
Right.
Right? And so it's the same pan you have in, like, Panera.
Right.
Right? Just over in Japan, they call it a panya, because ya is shop.
Right.
You know?
So it's – but it's – again, it's that – it's not bastardization. It's thievery at its finest.
Yeah, sure.
And we've done it a number of times. English is nothing but thieves.
English doesn't borrow words from other cultures. It mugs them in back alleys for loose grammar.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. And then really, really messes with it
yes.
all the way through. But, like, it's just interesting when you get to these terms.
Uh-huh.
And other cultures, and you're like, oh, that's just the same word we use. Yeah, because we stole it from you because we didn't have that word. We didn't need that word, but now we do. Like,
knocks at the box, says Panera bread equals bread. God damn it, Moon.
That's fair. That's fair. Oh, yeah. So we feel for you guys in other countries trying to play American English games. And I say American English games.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus the Queen's English, if you will. But it's, yeah, the language is tough. And it's got to be twice as tough when you're dealing with English slanged.
English lingo that has been partially translated into another language.
Oh my gosh, it's like watching old episodes of Firefly, where they're literally just throwing in Mandarin.
Yeah.
And it's slang Mandarin.
Right.
At best.
Right.
Like,
right.
Low Mandarin. Like, when I was in school, I learned High German.
Mm-hmm.
Hochdeutsch. And I remember only bits and pieces of it. But any conversation was never Hochdeutsch. Like, I could understand some people in conversation. But for the most part, like, even when I was young and younger and I remembered it, you know, because I was still studying it, and I went out to Vegas for Comdex and Germans were, you know, riding elevators and stuff and talking, I could understand about 2/3 of what they were saying. But it was just so different. It's different as a city person going to a rural area,
mm-hmm.
and listening to the drawl.
Oh, yeah.
You talked about that in Japan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was an exchange student in Japan for a little bit in high school. And so we, in Japanese classes, they will teach you Kanto Japanese, which is Eastern Japanese, which is otherwise known as Tokyo Ben, basically.
Right.
They teach you, like, Tokyo is proper Japanese.
Right, right.
Right? And then I was living near Kyoto, west, and they have their own accent and dialect out there, which, of course, from a bunch of high school kids, I picked up how to talk.
Sure.
And so I came back with a thick Western accent.
Mm-hmm.
When I walked into my Japanese class, first day back from being in Japan, and I basically walked in and did the Japanese equivalent of, hi, y'all in!
Yeah.
And we had an exchange teacher, Ishida-sensei, and Ishida-sensei practically hit the floor. She was laughing so hard. And I was like, what did I say? And she was like, it's not what you said, it's how you said it. Your accent is so thick. It's adorable.
Yep. But I think that's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. I think it's telling of blends of culture, but just those moments,
mm-hmm.
you know, like how did you learn English? Watching John Wayne.
Right. Right. Yippee-ki-yay.
Okay. Well, you're clearly excited.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's a thing people say.
All right.
You want to wrap it up?
Yeah. So, our third from final episode.
I'm tentatively calling it Hot Takes from the Internet.
I kind of like that.
Okay.
I like that because there are some other stuff that I've got to dig out.
I'm going to be real with you guys. Our planning for these last couple episodes got a little fast and loose.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
We kind of just had it tentatively written down of like ? Reddit posts.
Well, because we've talked about a lot of Reddit posts that we've run across, but we've never really dive into them.
Yeah, we always kind of want to gossip about them. And we do it like in between each other. And honestly, getting back to the roots of what this show is,
exactly.
Two storytellers gossiping with one another about the state of RPGs was how this show got started in the first place.
Yeah.
Of, you know, if we're going to do this for 3 hours, we might as well have microphones in front of us. You know?
Somebody might want to hear this.
And then next week we had a podcast. So
pretty much.
I think we get back to our roots, you know. I think we want to find some hot takes from the internet.
Yeah.
I'm going to invite all of you as well. We're going to start. I know we always put the call out on Reddit for questions and stuff like that. But,
or on Discord, yeah.
On Discord, I'm sorry, yeah. But what I would like from you guys is your spicy hot takes.
Yeah, if you found like a Reddit post or a forums post or even a TikTok.
Not even that.
Yeah.
Not even that. Like, it doesn't have to come from, like, I want your spicy hot takes.
Oh, okay.
Okay. If you've got a, you know, D&D first edition is severely underrated and you're all wrong about it, hot take or so. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there as an example, you know?
Sure.
If you've got something that you want to throw at us that you think is spicy red hot that you want us to discuss and
yep.
you want to hear our opinions on, by all means, please, this is your forum, throw it at us.
Yeah, it can be something just as simple as, like, do you think the OGL stuff is over?
Yeah.
Like, you know, has Critical Role lost their mind in creating their own game? Sure. Why not?
Sure.
I'd love to hear it. Anything like that. You know, what's the, you know, where are we at? You know, and you can make it as narrow as you need it.
And just a reminder, too, that even if you're not on our Discord, like, we still have a Twitter and mm-hmm. stuff that, like, you can still shoot us comments, like, just add us on Twitter.
Yeah, please.
And tell us what your spicy hot take is. If you don't want to join the Discord, that's fine.
Yeah, totally.
Whatever. But yeah, I'd love to hear them. I'd love mm-hmm. to bring them up here mm-hmm. on the air. I would love to be shocked and appalled by them or agree with you and dare other people to fight me over it. Let's do it.
Yeah, give us some time to think about these mm-hmm. things. I'll put a post up right after the show just so we can start pulling these things in. So
right on.
All right.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can find us on Twitter at @ST_Conclave, on Instagram at @ST_Conclave. Listen to us live every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time on mixlr.com/storyteller-conclave. And join us up on our Discord. We'd love to hear from you there. Talk to the other great storytellers that are there. Shoot us some questions to answer on the air. You can find that link on our Twitter as well as our website, storytellerconclave.com.
We'd like to thank our Patreon members who support us every month, especially our named members, Knox in the Box, Subjet, The Arcane Asylum, Huluvu, Sam, Sean, and Sparkle Motion. We appreciate all your support. Our pre-show music is by Arcane Anthems. You can find them at patreon.com/arcaneanthems. Our intro music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. You can find that at geefrog.bandcamp.com or on YouTube Music. And our outro music, which you're hearing right now, is Only Our Footprints in the Sand by Midair Machine. You can find them at freemusicarchive.org.
And a big shout out, as always, to our families, Vicky and Sean. Thank you so much for loving and supporting us. All of our friends who've sat with us at our tables over the years, who give these great stories to share with you, and you, every single one of our listeners. We love you guys so much.
We love you guys.
Good night.
Good night.